The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre, providers of the fastest fibre optic broadband on the island. Call them on 01983 240 240. That's 01983 240 240.
So here we are. It's Macca and Nurse Bex here until 1 o'clock. We're discussing assisted suicide today, purely and simply because there was a bill that was voted on by the Parliament that we've just voted in the last few months, and they said they're against it. And it just got made, it just made me start thinking about this, and it provoked not a disagreement, but it is a fantastic debate. Now, I look at this slightly differently to everyone else, because I think sometimes we sweep things under the carpet and we don't talk about them in the way that maybe we should. Mm-hmm. And it's going to sound flippant, and it's not meant.
Okay.
But just go with it.
Okay.
I'll just put yourself in the situation where if you were in a position where you knew that you were going to die at some point because you were in pain and you obviously developed some horrible disease and there was no cure for it, okay? Mm-hmm. And the specialists that be say to you, you got 12 months. And by the way, after 3 months, you're going to be in a lot of pain, and the pain's going to get a hell of a lot worse. Mm-hmm. I would like to know and think that there was something out there that I could do for myself to go through with assisted suicide. Just something like, and this is where it sounds a bit flippant, mm-hmm. just like you walk into the high street and there's a pop-up shop, a place that, you know, it's not going to look like a pound shop or anything like that, but you can walk in and you get met by somebody and you say, look, I've been diagnosed with something, it's not nice, and after a period of time, sadly, you know, I'm going to die, but it's going to be a painful death. Mm-hmm. I would like to discuss my options with somebody. They sit you down, they're not the expert, they're the caring sort, they sit you down, discuss what's, you know, the situation, and pass you over to someone that is, you know, in a specialist field, where they can talk about the disease that you may have got and death and so on and so forth. So you start the ball rolling by talking about it openly and honestly, and they tell you what your options are. You can then discuss, and again, it might sound flippant, you can discuss your death, mm-hmm. how you're going to die, when you're going to die, and what you can do to alleviate the pain and the suffering for those ones that you leave behind, mm-hmm. rather than go through 12 months of sheer hell. Your family goes through absolute hell as well. The pain that you're going to suffer is, you know, too incredible. I was just thinking, why don't we just make it easier on ourselves and have something in the high street where you can go and walk and talk to, and they put you onto the specialist people. You can't just go in and say, right, okay, I want that box over there. Can you do me next Tuesday? There's a protocol put in place. There are people like yourself, trained nurses, that you have to go and see and speak to, and make the whole situation, the whole problem that you have, a lot more bearable than it would be if we just buried our heads in the sand and don't talk about it, which is generally what us Brits do.
Yes.
And I look at other countries, and I don't know too much about it, Bex. It just got me thinking. If you were in that situation, what would you rather? You'd rather be in pain and someone else, or it's in someone else's hands when you go? Or would you rather think, hang on a minute, I've put up with the pain now for a month, I know I'm going to go anyway, I'd rather go now, we could have a bit of a celebration, a bit of a do, invite the family round, they can all say goodbye properly. See, you're laughing, you think I'm flippant, but I just look at this and think, wouldn't that be a nicer way to go, rather than have 9 months or 12 months or even years of absolute hell and pain to go through? Not just you go through it, but your family go through it as well. Wouldn't it be nice to have a big send-off, a do, when you can pick the time and the place, you decide? And I think too often we just bury our heads in the sand and don't talk about it because it's a taboo subject. Oh, don't talk like that. That's awful. I've been talking to my mum recently. She's 81. Last week, she made the joke of, oh, I think the Grim Reaper came for me. I thought he was coming for me last week. And she's always said, if I'm got to a stage in my life where I need to go into a home and I'm a burden on people and I'm not enjoying my life, I'd rather just be able to take a pill and go. Mm-hmm. I'd like to have a situation where we can say, look, get all the friends and family around. We can say goodbye properly, and you know that way you alleviate a lot of pain, you alleviate a lot of suffering for other people and yourself as well. Wouldn't that be a better world? See, the thing is, for those people that are, and there's so many things to take into consideration. That's why if you had an area somewhere where you could go in to a shop. I mean, maybe it is flippant having it on the high street. Maybe it is a bit more private. Maybe it is a bit more back street. But I'm just thinking, no, keep it honest. Keep it up front.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a person that was suffering from depression, I think that there are many people that suffer from depression more than we actually realise.
Yep.
They're probably able to be turned around. They're probably able to turn their lives around. But when you've got something terminal, when you've got something that ain't going to go away and you are just going to be in pain for the rest of your life and that person has decided, hey, look, I've had enough. Come on, help me out here. I think that we owe it to those people to put something in place. Other countries are able to, and I've looked at some of the countries that are, obviously, if we don't do it here, we go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and this is another flippant comment. It would be good for business. Because you'd have another business, you'd have more people coming in through the doors. You wouldn't be clogging up the, you know, the hospitals quite so much because it would alleviate some of the problems. It would alleviate some of the cash problems that we have with the pension pots and things like that. I know this sounds flippant, but when it comes down to it, it's cold, but it's factual and it is assisting.
But you're also taking away, if you like, I think, the sacredness of life. You know, life shouldn't be measured in how much of a burden you are, how much you're going to cost the NHS. At the end of the day, money is a token that we exchange with people for goods. It's not more important than life, Ian. And I think I worked at the hospice for 6 months, and very, very, very few people had pain that couldn't be controlled. We do have the means to control people's pain. We do have the means to help people out. You know, if people are saying, I don't want to be a burden, blah, 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 then, you know, shame on us for making them feel that way.
I agree, but then, you know, in the reality of it is that we can't do that for everyone. And, you know, you're not going to be able to help everybody. And surely it comes down to, you know, if somebody wants to do it, if Joe Bloggs down the road there was in a situation where there's no way out for him and he wanted to do, I think we should be offering that as a way out.
If somebody wants to do it, Ian, there's nothing stopping them. Why do we have to have a law about it?
But they're going to Luxembourg anyway. What I'm saying is, if we started up our own businesses, if you like, at least we can keep it in house, and at least there'll be money going back into the economy. That sounds flippant, but
so what? You know, someone can't afford the service then?
What, insurance?
Okay.
So
you think insurance companies would pay?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I know it sounds flippant, but honestly, that's me. I just looked at it and addressed it. What would you like, Ian? If it was you, and I'm sure there are many other people who feel the same way, and I know that there'd be many other people that might be slightly offended by what I've just said, or a little bit raising their eyebrows, but I'm just thinking there's a lot of people out there that we don't cater for because they just say, no, you can't do it. Well, hang on a minute, I'm ill. I'm seriously ill.
Ian, is that if somebody... I mean, a lot of people, when they get terminal illness, they are nursed at home. You know, there's Macmillan nurses,
sure,
and stuff like that. And when I've done Macmillan nurses, there's always been ample morphine and other very strong drugs around.
Let me just point out, this is not enforced. You get the choice. It's not like...
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, why do we have to enshrine something in law? There is nothing to stop people taking an overdose of medication if they want to end their lives. Nothing.
Right.
So why do you need a law to do it?
Well, why did they have a vote on it then?
I don't know. To be honest, I think it's a bit like the fox hunting thing. It's something, you know, let's keep our eyes off the ball about everything else we're doing.
Yeah, that's
frankly
true. Should we take a call?
Yeah.
Hi, who's this?
Hello, Ian. Hello, Bex.
Hi, Keith. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you. Ian, I think I've said this to you before. Have you ever seen a film called Soylent Green?
No, I still haven't.
Well, I saw this back in about 73, I think it was. 73. Yeah, definitely 73. And it was based very much like the situation the world's in at the moment. There was uncontrollable riots, etc., etc. And there was a system there that was run by a corporation that dealt with suicides. If you had enough, you could go and, you know, just basically end it. And the way they handled it was incredible scene in the film. The chap, it was played by, I think it was his last part he ever played, Edward G. Robinson. And he went to this place, this big corporate building, looked like a hospital, but it wasn't. Went inside and he chose the piece of music and how he wanted to die. And they basically administered this drug or whatever it was that killed him. And he was led on a bed and all around him there was classical music playing. And there was woodland scenes with animals and mountains, and he just drifted off, and that was it.
See, I think what is wrong? What is wrong with that?
Nothing. I reckon that's a very dignified and
absolutely
an excellent way to go if you wanted to go. Yeah.
I honestly think that we're I don't know. We shove it under the carpet. We don't. Oh no, you can't do that. That's wrong. But what we're doing is we're only speaking for X amount of people.
Yeah.
What about the people that do want to do that? What about those people that do want to say, right? Okay. I've got a terminal illness, I'm going to die, and I would much rather have some kind of get-together and, you know, get the family all together and be able to say goodbye. What we're doing in this country is not being able to do that properly.
No,
we've got to go abroad to do it.
And you know, the loved ones that want to sort of help and send them on their way, so to speak, you know, if they do that, they're penalised. Why? You know, why should they be allowed to suffer themselves, watching a loved one suffer and slowly drift away into illness and, you know, where they can't control it and sadly wait for him to die? Why can't they just end it when he's in a sort of, or the person's in a sort of decent frame of mind to do it, and the other partner with them can watch him go or watch her go in, you know, in complete peace and serenity?
Can I ask you a personal question?
Yeah,
feel free to not answer it.
I know what you're going to ask me, yeah.
We all know that, you know, anyone that knows Keith knows that he's battled cancer 2-3 times.
Yeah, we're still suffering now, mate, yeah.
And it must have, in your brain somewhere, must have thought, how long have I got? Is it, and what if it gets to this stage? What am I going to do? I mean, I personally, if I was in the stage, if I was in a stage where you've got X amount of months to live, I would like to go when I choose. I would like the opportunity to say goodbye to those people and give them the opportunity to say goodbye to me. If that's not too silly, and you know, I
no, it's not silly at all.
Has that ever crossed your mind?
Oh yes, indeed. It's like my mother. She, you know, several years ago, she knew when she got to a certain age and she wasn't. She's okay, she's out and about, but, you know, she's not got an excellent quality way of life. She's fine, she suffers with illness herself, but, you know, she's planned her funeral right down to her songs and everything, mate. It's all sorted and paid for.
Do you know what's really nice when you get into that? And I say, it sounds a bit sick and it sounds a bit like, you know, other people might think, oh, you're being a bit flippant, but I think that's how we've got to be to deal with it sometimes, because we do, we shove it under the carpet. I think it's lovely that you've discussed what you're going to do and so on, rather than, oh, I didn't know, and then later on you think, oh, I've got to, I'm lumbered. No, you've got a job. When your mum sadly eventually dies, you've got a job to do.
I'm pleased myself to see in the amount of funerals that I've attended recently, you know, where I've had the time to actually go and whatnot, and with my mum's friends and friends of my own, etc., etc. There is a bit more light coming into the dark, you know, where they're asking you to come dressed colourfully, and there's not so much sombre music now, and they're choosing their own music to decide to go with, you know what I mean?
I can fully understand what you're just saying. Obviously, it's slightly different when you lose someone far too young.
That
is, you know, that to me is totally different. But I can imagine, you know, I'm 50, and you know, I look at sometimes, as we all may do, is how long you got, how long do you reckon you got? Well, if I go to 60, you know, and I do think this quite often. I think, well, you've made 50, you've done all right, you've had a nice little life, it ain't been too bad.
Yeah.
I haven't been bombed or had my throat cut or,
no,
you know,
no,
people thrown acid at me and stuff like that. So we should be thankful. You know, sometimes we're a little bit greedy. And they call the term, my mum says, you know, people poach, they're poaching, they're time poaching all the time. And you think, yeah, okay, we're laughing and joking about it. Maybe we should be a bit more jovial about it. Maybe we should be a bit more honest. And, you know, I just think that is the way we are. We don't ever talk about it.
No, that's right.
I would like to plan my funeral and, you know, pick the music and stuff like that. I just think that's a lovely thing.
You better get on with it,
but
then,
you
mate.
Exactly. You talk to people about it, but they will, oh, no, you know what? Oh, don't talk like that. That's dreadful. But you know, we made a joke a couple of months ago when one of the councillors came in. He's doing a fantastic job on the roads, Councillor Phil Jordan. And he was celebrating his birthday. He was 66. And he was telling us that all the roads will be tarmacked within 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got another 5 years to wait and they will all be tarmacked. And I said to him jokingly, I said, no, Phil, you'll still be around to see it, Phil.
That's right.
Okay, and Bex, you looked at me and said, Ian, you can't say that. And I thought it was a joke.
Yeah.
But the trouble is, some of us do, you know, but unfortunately there's too many of us that can't have a joke about that situation.
Don't you think youth is being held up as the kind of nirvana of being? You know, everything's about youth culture now, don't you think?
Probably, yeah.
You know, you look on the telly, listen to the radio, it's all young hip-hop, you know, young people. When you get to a certain age, and I think we've probably reached that age, 50, you don't really count anymore, you know.
Mm.
And maybe we need to count people more. Maybe we need to look at older people's wisdom and how they can guide
We've taken away the choice. And, you know, how many times have we seen something in the news over the last 10 years where somebody has a life? I forget that poor
man. We never
man's,
gave anyone the choice.
That poor man that suffered, was all he wanted to do was be able to die. And and we took that right away from him. And, you know, I just think that's really, really sad.
But
and
you know what,
what,
Ian? Being brutal, killing yourself isn't that difficult. If you really want to do it, you can do it. And I don't see why it has to be enshrined in law. You know, when I worked with terminally ill, our philosophy of care was when they were reaching towards the end of their life, if you had to give them so much painkiller that it slightly hastened their death, then that was okay. You
in
know,
a way, in
the
a way
more important thing was to keep people comfortable. So if you like, they had a less frightening, less painful death. And I think that is pretty much what goes on.
But we've now moved on.
In a way, and
also, you look at pets. How many times have you had to have a pet put down, or you know somebody that's had a pet put down, and you think, well, hang on a minute, they didn't even think twice. Pet's ill, can't afford the care, or the pet's ill and it's going to die anyway, we're going to put it out of its misery. So we do it. Humanely, injection, you get the chance to say goodbye. We do it. And yet we bat an eye. We don't bat an eye when it's a pet, but when it's a human being, it's like, hang on a second, what's right here?
Yeah, but Ian, what I'm saying to you is that the medical profession isn't in the game of keeping people living longer in pain.
For Bex?
Yeah.
In a way, are we not assisting anyway? Because, you know what I'm going to say here, what about the term do not resuscitate?
Exactly. Do not resuscitate, do not treat. So if, say, somebody's very, very poorly and they get a pneumonia, you don't treat that with antibiotics.
No.
You know, I think it's probably very cruel to take water and food away from people because it's a very long, drawn-out death. I'm not convinced that's the right way we should be doing it. I just don't know.
So just say, for instance, I mean, I know what you're saying. If you wanted to take your own life, you could.
Yeah.
Okay, but just say, for instance, if you got to the stage where you were not in a position to take your own life, okay, because you were bedbound or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, how many times have you heard stories where a doctor's helped or a member of the family has helped,
yeah.
you know, and they get into trouble, and then they're done for, like, murder. You know, that's probably not the technical term, but they get done. They get charged.
Ian, what about the other term? I'm afraid do you want us to switch the machine off?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? if that machine's keeping somebody alive, are you killing them by turning the machine off?
Of course.
So it almost kind of exists, but it's not legally bounding, is it? Because you could say, right, okay, you're a nurse and you're working for someone, and this person has asked you, look, Bex, can you help me out here? I can't get to the cabinet to get those pills. Can you give me an overdose? I mean, when it comes down to it, I'm pretty sure that you couldn't do it. You'd have to think twice about it. But if you did do it, okay, the law says that you've assisted, and that's wrong, and you'll be charged. Yeah. You'll be prosecuted.
On the one hand, when you're working with people who are terminally ill, you don't want them to be in pain, you don't want them to suffer. So if the treatment that you give them for the pain and suffering hastens the end of their life, are you actually actively killing them, or are you helping them manage their pain and they're not dying in agony and frightened? And I think, actually, we need to kind of get it out there that there is a means to make sure that people don't die in agony.
Okay, but...
You know, but it's almost like people saying, oh, yeah, well, if I get to the stage where I'm in mortal agony, I don't want to live anymore. It shouldn't ever really get to that. It's very, very unusual. And I think it's a bit scaremongering to say that, actually, because people are going to be scared that they're going to end up in a position where they're completely helpless, totally in agony, and they're going to be left there to rot for weeks. It doesn't happen like that, Ian.
Well...
Mentally, the person that's suffering, you know, they must be going through torture, Bex.
Absolutely, but there's also that thing, isn't there, when you lose people who are very dear to you, and you sit there and pray, even if you don't believe in God, that you could have just had one more day with them.
Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong. Yeah.
So hastening this because the people are burdened or they're frightened, you know...
Are you saying that people that are... You know, unfortunately, in those situations where they're in incredible pain, that their pain is dealt with and they don't feel any?
Pretty much, Ian. I mean, we've got great pain relievers out there. We've got syringe drivers. You know, we've got ways of delivering pain relief to people so that it's constant.
Tomorrow, I'm in hospital having injections in my back again tomorrow.
Was it steroids, Keith?
This time they're going into the facet joints. So this is the third time. And all the other times have been unsuccessful. Guaranteed, after 36 hours, the pain's back. And so I don't know what the answer is to that. You know, I'm being administered pain relief, but it's not working.
So have they sent you to the pain clinic?
Yeah.
And what did they say?
Yeah, can't exercise due to the fact that my lungs are scarred and blood clots. So therefore, we can't do... What's the word they use? Is it... minimum effort, maximum... minimum input, maximum effort or something.
Right.
And, you know, I've only got to walk into the kitchen. I'm gasping for breath. Upstairs, my lips turn blue, and I'm in for that again on a couple of weeks' time. So, everything's... I'm being dealt with, but, the pain relief, sometimes it just doesn't work, Bex. You know, I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying that it doesn't work. They just got to keep trying and trying and trying till they actually find something to alleviate it.
No one
really knows what the patient's going through apart from the patient.
I've got to be honest, I've read numerous stories from various people and spoken to people, and a lot of those people have actually said, he was in pain right up to the moment he died. So, I don't dispute what you say, but I think there's an awful lot of people out there that have gone through way too much pain, and you can understand their feelings and their thoughts about ending their lives. That's just the way it is.
I better end this call because somebody's bound to be in pain trying to get in.
Cheers, Keith. Bye. So basically, we're talking about assisted suicide. Our politicians recently voted against assisted suicide. Which way would you have voted? And it's interesting. And I know that the nurses, doctors, of course they're going to say, I'm not sure, because that's what you want them to say. Because if they were, Harold Shipman like, you're going to think, well, hang on a minute, I don't trust you. That's not why you got into the profession, because you have a big heart and you want to save and you want to help people.
Absolutely.
So fully understand that, but I just think there are circumstances that maybe we should look at and maybe alleviate issues for people. Hi, who's this?
Hi, Ian, it's Jay.
Hello, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
Hello, Bex.
Hiya.
Nurse Bex.
It's really sort of grey area stuff, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I think you'd have to take each case on its own particular merits, wouldn't you?
Sure, yes. Absolutely.
I mean, if you're describing really, you know, abject suffering, and not only that, but there'd been some sort of prior consultation before the illness actually, you know, played out into its last stages, that this is what this person had agreed with, you know, for assisted suicide, then I think, yeah, absolutely, there's no question about it. Then, you know, that's just out of empathy, that's what you've got to do. But there's so many grey areas. I don't think you couldn't apply this, you know, in a sort of a general sweeping kind of way. But it's when Bex was talking about you know, pain relief for people that are in extreme pain. Mm-hmm. I mean, it kind of got a little bit conflated there with when Keith was describing his pain.
Yeah.
Keith isn't, thankfully, at terminal sort of stage yet, but my grandfather was. He was completely riddled with cancer,
mm-hmm.
and was in a hospice. But for the latter, you know, when everybody knew, the family and the people in the hospice sort of knew that was, you know, time up, for the end week of his life, he was completely out of the game on morphine,
mm-hmm.
you know, and didn't feel a thing.
Yeah.
Had felt a lot of pain in the run-up, but for the final sayonara, it was, I don't know, I can only imagine, I think it was painless, you know. So there's many sort of grey areas, but it's something we need to be very careful with, you know, just in terms of euthanasia, and there's also, you know, ideological movements of eugenics and things like
that. Yeah. Hello?
Are you still there?
Hello, yeah?
Yeah.
Hi. Yeah, did you hear me?
Yeah, I mean, I feel, Jay, that when people are ill and they need support, then we should be offering them all the support we can as a community that's supposed to have a welfare state.
Mm.
I don't want to hear people saying to me, well, I'm going to end my life because I don't want to be a burden on my family.
Yeah, you see, that's a social question, isn't it?
Isn't it?
If that gets to the stage where someone's saying that, then they're not really saying, I wish to opt out and for assisted suicide. What they're really saying is, I don't feel that there's any sort of place in society for me because, as you said, I feel like I'm a burden.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's something we're doing wrong as a
exactly.
society.
Completely. I couldn't agree with you more. And I think it's shameful.
Yeah. And, I mean, to... Again, to conflate it with, oh, well, you know, maybe I'm ill and I can't afford my treatments, or as you say, that I'm a burden, or you feel like a burden, then, yeah, that's a societal issue. It's not it's not an ethical question of, you know, are you being part of suffering to alleviate, you know, your pain?
Because, you know, I've worked with the elderly as well. Many of them... terribly guilty about being a burden.
Yeah.
You know, and I just want to say you're not a burden.
Sure.
You are the age you are with the problems you've got. That doesn't make you a burden.
Yeah.
You know?
Personally, I don't know what you guys think, but I think that's an uncomfortable reflection back on society and what we've created. The breakdown of not only community, but, you know, family ties as well. I mean, this is all new stuff as well. I mean,
I hear what the both of you are saying, and I think you make a really good point about people being a burden.
Mm.
That's why if you had a situation where you had trained people that you could go to see, or they came to see you, you could talk to Nora, who's 89 and feels that she's a bit of a burden, and then you can sort of liaise with the family and say, look, she feels a bit of a burden. This is dreadful. You take it upon yourself to take this woman under your wing and give her some help and give her some support and tell her she's not a burden.
Mm.
But, like you say, there's many... Every case would be totally different.
Yeah.
If Mr. Mac, 51 or 50 years old, walks in and says, I'm terminally ill, I've got 6 months to live, I don't want to go through those last 3 months, I'd much rather for the next 3 months spend a bit of time with the family, and then I want a bit of a send-off, and then I want to go... and I'm picking the day, I think for you guys to take that away from me, that chance away from me, when I've discussed it with everybody, there's no chance I'm going to live, I think that's not right.
But Ian, you're saying that's
not you feeling like a burden, is it, on society?
Exactly.
That's you recognising your own...
That's my own situation.
Mortality, you know it's coming. As you said, you expressed in that scenario, you're aware that, you know, your life will be coming to an end in XYZ period of time, and you're therefore choosing to... That's a different feeling from feeling just that you're a burden on society. You know, that's a lucid, very sharp-minded choice that you would make. And by all means, in that case, I would say, yeah, if that's how you feel and you know that the end's coming, then yeah, you've chosen that.
But vote has taken that away from me, not just me, but other people around, you know, the UK that can feel exactly the same way. You made the point right at the beginning where every case would be totally different.
Yeah.
That's it in a nutshell. It doesn't. Nothing clouds over. Nothing goes over into the next story. Every case should be treated differently.
But suicide is not against the law. So,
it is. Just say, for instance, if you get to the situation where. I think that I got 6 months, and quite clearly I haven't got 6 months, and I'm all of a sudden I'm bedridden, and I'm now in a hospital bed, and I can't move, and I can't make those decisions for me. I would wanted to put it in a situation where, when I get to that point, I want somebody to give me a tablet and put me out of my misery. Now, if you're not going to allow me to do that, you're stopping me from doing what I want to do. If little old granny from Wootton, who ain't got no relatives and ain't got no family, and she's really, really lonely, but she feels a bit of a burden on her friends and people that live around her, and that's the reason why she wants to go, and you can talk her around by talking to the people around her and saying, look, come on, you can support this lady and get her through what she needs to get through, then that's fine. But if we take away people's choice... You know, when they're in that situation, I think you treat every case as a different case.
Yeah, in that instance, I agree with all I'm saying. I'm not saying don't have it. I'm saying be meticulously, you know, scrutinise each situation. It would take a hell of a lot of resources to do this, but it's very few situations where I believe it would fully apply. And I think we've got to be careful with... conflating real reasons for actually wanting to end your own life, and I think that just feeling like a burden isn't one.
I completely agree, and I take your points on that. That you made, you know, that poor old little old granny is made to feel that way. Well, that's blimmin' dreadful, and shame on those people around her.
But it's also our society, Ian. We don't value our older people. We don't see them as wise people. We don't see that we've got anything to learn from them. We push them away into homes and sit, you know, let them sit in their little flats on their own.
Yeah.
And then they sit there saying, well, we're a bit lonely, but we don't want to be a burden. It's not just their families. It's us as a society.
Yeah, it's not a case. I'm not saying we should turn around right with a death squad. Can we help you?
You know. You're 70 years old. Here comes the van.
I didn't think you were coming across like that. I don't know. I think in more recent years, I think we have become a bit more loose with the concept of of ending people's lives or you know, not valuing life itself. And going into deep suffering for a terminal illness is one scenario, but I have in other scenarios where people are either, they feel suicidal because they're lonely or because they're, you know, as you said, they feel like a burden, which in itself needs unpackaged. You know, what does that mean? All sorts of stuff. Then they're the fundamentally wrong reasons. But in terms of, you know, foreseeable excruciating suffering, then yeah, by all means, I would facilitate that. I don't know how any rational mind would.
Okay, no, brilliant. Fine. Hey, look, we've got to take a quick break, but thanks for coming on the show today, Joe.
Thanks for that.
Cheers now. Joe. Bye. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk more on assisted suicide.
Yeah.
The Lunchtime Social is brought to you in association with White Fibre for the best deals in broadband, television and phone. 100% local. All employees live on the Isle of Wight. Check them out at www.whitefibre.com.
Putting the community back into local radio. This is Vectis Radio.
VectisRadio.com.
For the people, by the people.
Self-publishing your own book is much easier than you think it is. About your own life, a local historical event, an interesting untold story about a relative, pure fantasy or fiction, or maybe an illustrated children's book. Talk to Cross Print Media for advice on self-publishing and how to get started. Call 52 4885 or email us on printmedia@crossprint.co.uk.
Lifeline Alarms and Security Services, providing security and alarm services for the leisure industry, domestic and residential, and more, providing access control emergency systems, key holding, installation, monitoring intruder alarms, and much, much more. Check them out at www.lifeline-security.co.uk. Put your mind at rest. Call Lifeline Alarms and Security Services on 01983 521 621. That's 01983 521 621. Lifeline. They put you first.
The White Military and Heritage Museum. Situated on the main Cowes to Newport Road, the museum will excite your senses. Adults and children of all ages can experience the surge of adrenaline on an armoured vehicle ride around the tank track. For a real treat, why not try a ride in one of the Centurion tanks? There's also a covered rifle range to test your shooting skills. Enjoy refreshments in the cafe or the mess bar. Come along to the White Military and Heritage Museum, where you will be welcomed with open arms by our volunteer team. All profits are redistributed among armed service charities. Call 01983 300037 for more details or to book your ride.
Whitesight, here's how it works. You need glasses? Visit an optician, then bring your prescription along to the friendly team in Cross Street Ride. Whitesight is a boutique shop selling budget to designer frames and sunglasses, stockists of Dior, Gucci, Dolce & Gabbana, Ray-Ban and many more. They are an independent retailer, so you can shop locally for first-class service and great glasses. You'll be spoilt for choice. Either visit them in Cross Street Ride or check out www.whitesight.co.uk.
White Fibre, the island's fastest broadband. But don't just take our word for it. Here's John Willison from Cowes.
The best thing about White Fibre is their speed of response. And you're actually talking to a human being who you know is local. It's not transferred over to India or Scotland. It's a local person.
Get the island's fastest broadband free for 12 months. Call 240-240.
WhiteFibre.com.
24-month contract required. Fastest speeds available in all cabled areas.
Stay social and get in touch.
Give us a call on 01983 240 666.
The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre. Our packages are great value and we constantly check our prices to ensure we remain competitive against other providers. Call for a chat on 01983 240 240.
Okay then, welcome back to part two. We're talking assisted suicide, and from 1 o'clock today, you've got James and Judith here, and he's basically sent me a message saying, in case you're discussing assisted suicide this morning, we are going to be interviewing John Trotman, the chairman of the Isle of Wight Samaritans, this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Also Rita Harmon, who is their oldest volunteer after 50 years of service. Alan and Carl and David again at 3 p.m, who won the four in a bed and are putting out appeal for Macmillan Nurses. That's what's coming up in the afternoon show this afternoon between 1 and 4. Now, Brandon has been in the green room pacing up and down, and you just wanted to come in and put your five eggs in about assisted suicide.
Well, it's hard to word such a hefty subject on obviously assisting suicide. I mean, I can say it's right, other people could say it's wrong, other people could say, you know, it's right, I could say it's wrong. Whatever side you're going to take on it, it's either going to be right or wrong. And what I wanted to say was that if, in my opinion, if I was terminally ill or say I was in a car crash and I became paralysed, I wouldn't want to live a life that's less than what I have now. You know, I've obviously all my senses work. I can hear, I can see, I can touch, I can do whatever I want to. If I got any of this removed from me, I don't think I could live the life that I live anymore. If I went blind, I wouldn't want to live because I can't see the beauty of the world anymore. I won't see it change. I can only hear it change. I can only feel it change.
Yeah, but you can't make that decision now, can you?
Can only happen when it happens, but it's just that thing of, it's a big fear. I don't like the idea of being paralysed or so. I mean, some people live with that problem. Every time I see them, I take my hat off to them and just, I would help anyone like that. But when it comes down to it, I don't want to live like that. I mean, a couple of months ago, and it's a bit of a touchy subject, so if I do tear up, it's my own fault, but my nan had a stroke quite recently. It was a couple of months ago, and when she passed away, it was a big hit on the family, but the main thing I can remember is just seeing her on that bed, just not herself anymore. Her eyes, how she spoke, how she touched, how she felt, the smell, everything was different about her. She used to be a really independent woman that would get on the bus and see my sisters, look after them, look after me, do me toast. I took that for granted, I admit. But when she had a stroke, everything changed. The family changed. And seeing her from when that period of when it happened to when it ended, that's always going to be in my mind. That woman that was not herself, sitting on a bed, wasting away almost. And I feel that assisted suicide, or maybe suicide for that, would have helped if she made that choice. Obviously, it's up to her, not me. But I think if she said I wanted to, you know, pass away now, I've lived my life, I'm old now and I'm ill, I don't want to live like this isn't me, I could understand that. And I'd hold her hand and, again, take off my hat to her.
But you bring up a very valid point, and it's good to talk about experiences, because, you know, that's how we base all the thoughts on.
Yeah.
I mean, we can listen to other people, but you just imagine... Your grandmother would have been how old?
Oh, she would have been 80-something. I don't recall. She's an old lady.
And I can't talk for people that are that kind of age. But
yeah.
I would imagine there. It's a taboo subject.
It is.
Because they, you know, we've made it a taboo subject. We're talking about it today, openly and honestly.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff that we're saying, it might sound we're flippant. I actually mean everything that I'm saying. I'm not. When I say it might sound flippant, what I'm saying is. Is an 80-something year old generally won't want to talk about it because
yeah.
they feel that it's wrong. Now, I feel that if we were a bit more open and honest about it, you could find out whether those people that are of a certain age, that live in a different era and from a different period of time, is it what they want? You've got the chance now to talk about it openly and honestly. Whereas we don't, do we? We shut it up. And it's only this new generation we're a little bit more open and honest so we can talk about it. And I'm not saying that, okay, all those people that are over 80, do you want this to happen to you if the time comes? No, it's a case of we can talk about it openly and honestly. I've got that kind of relationship with my mum. She would talk about it openly and honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, God forbid that day, I'm sure it will come at some point, unfortunately, whether you act out what she wants you to do. And what I don't want to be doing is going to prison for it. And that's not the reason why I wanted
yeah.
them to vote the other way, by the way. Yeah, a bit more flippancy, but it's true. What I'm saying is true. I'm not lying. You know, so it's a case of, let's be open, let's be honest, let's talk about it. It's not a case, it's not for everyone.
Yeah, it's a touchy subject. It's something that people do hide away from because it's so powerful, and it's, you know, the big cycle of life is obviously there's a beginning and there is an end. Everyone kind of clings on to life, and it's obviously fair. People want to live for as long as they can. But some people can say, hey, I've lived a good enough life. I've lived more than what I should have. You know, I've experienced what I want to experience. Now is my time, and I don't want to wait 9 months in excruciating pain because I have an illness, or, you know, I don't feel myself. You know, it's just... It's a touchy subject.
It is, and there's a lot of people out there that have messaged in. I mean, Lisa Burt, I'm for every time, without a doubt, without hesitation. It befuddles me that I can be rightly prosecuted for allowing my pet to suffer, but I'm not allowed to help someone I love who wants to end their own suffering. This would make a great radio debate. Well, strangely enough,
yes.
Dave... David Doyle says, this is one of those things where I keep changing my opinion. Part of me says my body, my mind, my choices, but another part of me says, no, too many variables, so I'm on the fence for a change. Ali says, as a nation, we do not allow animals to suffer and have a choice of ending their misery. So why do we allow each other to suffer, sometimes for days, weeks or months before dying? It is not a dignified death to be kept alive against your wishes. Rarely is death dignified or peaceful at all. It haunts relatives and friends who have to go through it for many years. Write a living will. If written while of a sound mind, it should be adhered to. Marco says, assist. Kevin Barclay J says, pro-choice. And what do we got here? Julian says, if I'm that ill, I will sort it myself. No assistance. When I feel it's enough is enough, I'll go somewhere and end this life. Philip Pyro Petty says, I'm against. Teresa says, against. Every life is precious and God-given. See, I also look at that and think, why do you have to bring religion into it? You know, just take the religion, take the sentiment out of it, deal with the facts. You live, you die.
You can't take the sentiment out. These are human beings who are loved.
But see, this is the thing. This is why we can't talk about it, because we have to, we've got the emotion of it. No, take the emotion out.
Part of being human, part of what makes us human beings and not animals, is our emotions and our ability to have relationships.
What are we saying? Dogs don't have emotions.
I'm not saying they don't have emotions, Ian, but they don't have the thought processes that we do, as far as we know. But you can't say, let's just be logical about life or death, because it's not logical. It's life or death.
Okay, well, why bring religion into it? Do we have to bring religion into
people,
it?
Some people, it matters to them.
Anyway, Carol says, I agree with what you're saying, Ian, on the programme, and no, not everybody can take their own lives due to the nature of their illness. Having watched many relatives go through hell, it should be individual choice. And I think that's the thing. I think they should have voted yes, but they should have said, right, each individual case is an individual case. Mm-hmm. We're not saying that we're rubber stamping it, but what we are saying is, if you can individually convince us that is the best way forward, then they should rubber stamp it.
I don't think they should, really. I mean, it happens anyway, and actually very, very few people who help a loved one in the terminal stages of illness do ever get prosecuted, because it's looked at in every individual case. I'm just concerned that if we make it law, that you are going to have people thinking, I don't want to be a burden to my family, I'll book it 6 months before, and perhaps I should too.
Just move yourself a little bit closer to that microphone, so you're all quiet.
Have I?
It makes a change, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hey? But I kind of hear what you're saying, but I also think what they should have done was allowed it, but in special circumstances. Because they are special circumstances. We're not just going to allow it willy-nilly.
Yeah, it should be
allow it, but...
Yeah, it's like, when it comes down to things, because obviously suicide can be for many things, could be old people, young people, middle-aged people. For young people, I've experienced a couple of people that have gone through depression as well. I'm not saying I'm an expert on the subject, but the main thing I always say to them, and it always opens up their eyes, you've got a life to live still. You can have kids, you can have, a wife or a husband. You've got your family, your little sisters, your little brothers or older brothers, older sisters. They're going to look to you, and if they say, you've just not thrown your life away, but you've given up on your life, that's not the way you want to go. I mean, I've seen someone gone from one stage of it to the other stage, and they thanked me for it and said, what you've said is something that's kind of eye-opening. You don't want to just give up on your life.
Let me just put it this way. If I was running one of these pop-up shops down the high street, okay, and you came in and you said, I wanted to end my life because I've been a bit miserable, or I'm suffering from severe depression, I would say to you, that ain't going to happen, son. But what I am going to do is I'm going to refer you to somebody who can help you. But
yeah.
I'm not going to put you to sleep. Mm-hmm. You know, this is for terminally ill people that are not going to get better.
Let's be realistic. Our mental health service is already completely under-resourced. Our hospital is already completely under-resourced. What you're saying is we're going to set up yet another service, which is going to be completely under-resourced, by the way. You say to Brandon, I'll refer you to mental health services. He'll be stuck on a list for 2 months. You know, let's get our house in order to help people before we start saying to them, obviously you can't be helped, you can shuffle off this mortal coil, here's the pill. You know, let's give people choices first. Mm.
But then, do you know that that is the case?
Yes, I mean, I do know that's the case.
It's going to cost you loads of money to do.
Of course, it is.
And implement.
You'd have to have people psychologically both.
Yeah, but
properly.
this isn't like going to be. There's going to be a massive, massive waiting list. This is going to be, you know, special circumstances. There's not going to be like a queue outside my pop-up shop in the high street. You know, you're not talking like hundreds, thousands
you're
of people here.
Blithely, I'll just refer people.
In special,
and I'm saying to you,
they should be doing that anyway.
That people will go up to St Mary's A&E now, having tried to commit suicide, and they'll be discharged the same day because there isn't enough mental health services to pick these people up quickly enough.
But that's not the issue that we're talking about. We're talking about assisted suicide.
Well, one thing it comes down to, Bex, there, you've got it right. Definitely, people need to be psychologically profiled and spoken to. But what I think it needs to be is they need to talk to someone. Someone who has a good head on them as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'm no professional, but I've helped people. Matt Mack is no professional. I bet you've helped. Well, you've helped people, obviously.
I've never helped anybody but myself.
You've helped me, so that's one.
Right, yeah, me in tears in a minute. Crikey.
Yeah, but there's also a really simple way as well that is about this subject. You ever watch The Simpsons where Grandpa wants to pass away? And he does a suicidal thing on that. It was a side-off episode, and it's not aired often. But he goes to that place to pass away, and it's a really powerful episode, and it explains all the details in that, and it's so gripping. I mean, yeah, it's a cartoon thing, and it's The Simpsons, but it has got some very powerful meanings in it. Yeah. And it's him in the room with the injection, and right at the last minute he says, I don't want to. You know, I've got some life left, and I can help other people with the knowledge I have.
Mm.
It's that kind of subject that, you know, I've got an idea on, and I've experienced bits of it, and it's like a big whirl of yes or no, and I think they should have said yes, but under very special circumstances.
I think that's what they should have said. They voted yes, but special circumstances. You know, that's probably not the right term to use. But when that chap we all saw that couldn't do anything for himself, and his wife, you know, was doing the talking for him, and he wanted to go. And he wasn't allowed to go, and he went through years and years of suffering. And we watched him as a nation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, how bad is that, that we have not put something in place that helps people like you? I'm not saying it's an everyday occurrence. That mm-hmm. was a special, and I'm sure there's numerous people out there that are in that circumstance. And I say we should be helping those. Not a case of let's have a mass exodus, you know. Yeah. We're going to get rid of a load. No, these are special circumstances that we're talking about. Anybody with depression that can be fixed. Anybody that can be fixed.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to say, look, don't waste our time. You'll be all right. We'll refer you to someone.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But we have to make sure those someones are there. And they're not there now, Ian. So I can't see, even if they passed a yes, that they would have been there.
But then that's not the fault of this bill that was pushed through.
No, but I'm saying, in order to create a bill like that, you need to have a really sound underpinning.
Well, you just make sure that, hey, if you're suffering from depression, forget it. This is for terminally ill people, special circumstances only.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's it. And if you ain't got the ticket, you ain't coming in. It's as simple as that. And that sounds flippant, but that's the way we should be. We should be able to talk about it openly and honestly. Look at us. We haven't had a row. We haven't fallen out.
No.
We haven't offended anybody. It's just us in a room talking about some things that other people would find difficult, or it's taboo because of their age, because that's not the done thing. I say it should be the done thing. We should be talking about it. And then we do highlight those things, because one of the other things that has highlighted, and I've gone away with this because you put the seed of thought in my head, is that when someone of a certain age, there's nought wrong with them, but they say, no, I just want to go because I'm a bit of a burden, I think that's an absolute disgrace.
Yeah.
That's outrageous. Yeah. And maybe those people that are in those kind of relationships with those old people that have had and heard that, then take a good long look at yourself.
Absolutely.
Because you really do need to. So these things we're talking about, they highlight those things.
Absolutely.
So anyway, should we leave it there?
Yes.
Because we've got to make way for James and Judith. Okay.
We have.
Thank you, Nurse Bex.
Oh, pleasure. See you next week.
Thank you, Dr. Brandon.
Thanks.